I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And I'm Dablina Chakraborty.
And today's topic is a very popular listener suggestion, because who doesn't love underground cities? I mean, they're so mysterious. It's kind of the world that we want to hide from ourselves if we want to get really philosophical about it. Sewers, bones, all kinds of
scary.
Things. Yeah, kind of scary. Kind of scary. I mean, certainly if you're going to go into like comic book territory, it's where the Penguin lives, the bad guy.
Right. You don't want to go down there by yourself.
But intriguing too. And I think that's why so many people have suggested this topic to us. And not too long ago, I actually edited an article on urban exploring by my freelancer, Julia Layton. And it was, you know, it covered the whole range of urban exploring options, what like exploring abandoned buildings, factories, that sort of thing.
Yep.
But it was the underground spots that she mentioned, like these abandoned coal mines in France or the Denver International Airport, which has this crazy underground baggage handling labyrinth and all these New World Order conspiracy theories. It was that kind of thing that really captivated my attention with that article.
Yeah, so that's kind of where this idea came from, and we wanted to do a mix of cities. But interestingly, some of the listener suggestions that we've gotten over the years have been kind of out of the ordinary.
Just as out of the ordinary as the Denver International Airport, an unexpected underground location.
Right. Not the typical London, Rome, Paris lineup that you might expect if you hear about underground cities, though we will be talking about some of those too. So fittingly, many of the suggestions seem to be inspired by personal experience, people who had seen these subterranean worlds on guided tours and wanted other people to know about them. And that seems like a good place for us to insert a little caveat here. While a lot of places we'll mention are open to the public and are safe to tour, unsurprisingly, most underground areas are not. They can be dangerous, deadly, and illegal. So just a disclaimer there.
Our little disclaimer before we start. We're actually even going to be mentioning a special police unit that tries to discourage exploration or trespassing, depending on which side of the law you're on there, in one particularly famous underground city. But the first selection on our list is a truly ancient underground city. And if you've ever seen Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, you're going to be visually familiar already with Petra. In the movie, it's the one of the buildings of Petra is the setting for the temple that holds the Holy Grail. And in the movie, the real life stone facade of that building, it's called the Treasury in real life, leads to this elaborate underground world. So it's probably not going to be too hard for folks who've only seen the movie to imagine that there's an underground city connected to Petra, but that's not entirely the case. It's rather misleading.
At least not when it comes to that treasury part.
Yeah, when it comes to the treasury building, that really is mostly a facade with just a very small room carved out into the cliffs behind it that was once used as a tomb. But Petra as a whole definitely counts as an amazing underground city.
It does. The Nabataeans, formerly a nomadic tribe, built it as their capital in what is today Jordan. And though they were annexed into the Roman Empire in AD 106, Petra thrived as a trading capital for hundreds of years after that. So the mountains made the city defendable from attacks, and the soft rocks made it easy to carve and excavate underground areas, in addition to creating an amazing water system, pipes, reservoirs, etc., that allowed for fruit to be grown in this arid region, plus gardens, baths, drinking water. It allowed for the inclusion of those things as well.
So all these pipes just carved right through rock. I think it might be maybe not the most visually impressive part of Petra, certainly an accomplishment, but it was an unknown city to Westerners from the 12th century Crusades until 1812 when a guy named Johann Ludwig Burckhardt came across it. It was a story you would read in a real Victorian sort of travel account almost. You know, he was disguised as a Persian pilgrim, came across these ruins. And while obviously, like I just said, very visually impressive, you know, imagine soaring buildings carved into rock and all these diverse architectural styles peppered with enticing caves and underground chambers. For a long time, archaeologists just saw what was on the surface. You know, they just saw it as this very strange, very elaborate tomb town. I mean, the treasury that we mentioned earlier is a prime example of that. This beautiful facade, but just a tiny room underneath. I mean, certainly not built for a thriving city.
Right, and it actually wasn't until the later 20th century that the full scale of Petra started to reveal itself. According to a Smithsonian article by Andrew Lawler, some 800 caves have been identified to this point. Some were tombs, others gathering spots, or just places to escape from the heat. And a thriving surface-level city also existed with a 600-seat theater, Roman-style villas, including one that's been excavated, which contains an olive press and Pompeii-style frescoes. And these things obviously didn't survive intact, leading to that original sort of eerie impression that Petra was underground only.
Exactly. And in reality, as many as 30,000 people probably lived in Petra at its height. But finally, you know, as a trading city, it really relied on lots of people coming through. And as new caravan routes developed and as the sea trade stole away some of the business, eventually the city fell into decline. Earthquakes didn't help matters either. Today, though, it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, so an underground city that you can actually explore to a certain extent. But there's a lot left to explore. I mean, a lot left for the professionals to explore, I'd say. According to a National Geographic article by Madi Miltstein, only 15% of the site has been excavated. So
plenty to learn there.
Find all sorts of new things. But Petra, we started off because it really seems like an engineering marvel. I mean, not just because of those beautiful facades, but all those caves carved deep into the rock, something that was clearly carefully planned, carefully executed over a long period of time. But the next entry on our list is the epitome of an afterthought.
Yeah, and it's a lot closer to home for us. It's actually Seattle, which was founded in the mid-1800s. In not exactly the best location as far as tidal flooding went. The city experienced major flooding problems right from the start, but it wasn't really bad enough for them to deal with the problem right away. But in the summer of 1889, a major fire burned the town, which was mostly wood at that point, to the ground. And new building codes reasoned out the fire risk and ordered new construction to be done in brick or stone. But nobody really considered the flood issue still until many new buildings were already standing.
Doesn't seem like the best time to figure, oh, we actually have a problem with this.
Especially when you're working in brick.
or stone. So finally, though, city engineers decided that to handle the flooding, they were just going to have to raise the streets. I mean, easy peasy, right?
Right.
Not so much. But they started this massive undertaking in the 1890s, and they did it by building these retaining walls that were just a few feet beyond the existing buildings, and then they would backfill between the walls and then pave the new raised surface as a road. This is the really crazy part. I mean, as if that doesn't sound strange enough. The city ran out of money before sidewalks could be completed. So in a lot of areas, you ended up with this bizarre situation where you had a road with two deep channels running on either side. So if you wanted to cross the street, you might just imagine yourself walking out of a building. You're immediately face to face with a retaining wall. Then you'd turn, walk in this little channel between the building and the retaining wall until you got to a ladder. You would climb the ladder, according to Ken Van Vechten in the LA Times, somewhere as high as 35 feet tall. I mean, don't buy too many supplies while you're out shopping. And then when you finally got to the top of the ladder, you could cross the street, do it all again. Sounds like a chore.
Yeah, but I bet you'd stay in pretty good shape if you had to do
this. Some vertical exercise from time to time.
It took an entertainment tax on vice to raise enough money for sidewalks, though these weren't just backfilled like the streets. Instead, arches were built between the buildings and the retaining walls with sidewalk roofs built on top. So for years, people continued to use the underground storefronts and sidewalks until disease finally made it unsafe.
And I think that is even stranger than the previous scenario I was describing, that you would just have a two-level sidewalk, essentially, and two levels of storefronts.
Yeah, it sounds more complicated to me.
It does, yes. I can imagine getting directions for a store and you're out on the street looking for it, and then you're like, oh, man, it must be in the lower level. Okay, so Seattle, Washington, certainly a strange entry on our list. And obviously, the city's underground was the accidental result of handling a problem. Certainly not anything the engineers set out to do. But the next entry on our list was an underground city that was very much intentional.
Yeah, actually, out of all the entries on this list, it might be the most legitimate underground city. So it's Derinkuyu, and it's in Turkey's historical Cappadocia region. Cappadocia has this really unusual terrain. Ancient volcanoes plus erosion has created strange conical mountains, sometimes called fairy chimneys. And because, like Petra, this region was once a trading hotspot, and because the rock is soft, it also has a lot of caves and underground areas, which are perfect for avoiding looters and raiders if you are looking to do that sort
Some
of thing.
Some ancient merchant, perhaps.
Right. So according to Travel Weekly, there are more than 40 underground cities in the region, with Derinkuyu being the largest. It was discovered in 1963 when a home renovation uncovered a hidden passage, and it led to a 13-story deep city with a room for up to 20,000 people.
Well, with a series of rooms. I mean, just endless chambers and chambers and tunnels and passageways and really not just living areas either. There were stables for livestock, wine presses, storerooms. I mean, literally an underground city. Numerous ventilation shafts to keep the city safe and keep the air healthy. And kind of ominously, these 1,000-pound stone doors, they look like they'd be out of a cartoon or something. I mean, giant stone wheels that apparently one person could move by himself, although they could only be moved from the inside only. So trying to keep somebody out of the underground city. Most historians believe that this Derinkuyu was built by Phrygians in about 800 BC. Others think it's older than that, in fact, much older, and was built by Zoroastrians in this sort of Noah-esque type undertaking to protect the chosen during a great disaster. And I checked out a History Channel segment on it and was even treated to some pretty fun theories. I mean, you got to have amazing theories like this if you're going to be talking about underground cities, right? Involving extraterrestrials, both as engineers planning the place and invaders who necessitated it being built in the first place.
This reminds me of that South Park episode where they watch the History Channel to find out about the first Thanksgiving, and it's all about extraterrestrials, but...
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Just an aside.
It's, regardless of who built it, it's a pretty impressive thing. And I definitely encourage you guys to look up a map of it. That sort of helps provide the scale we're talking about. I mean, if 20,000 people doesn't already do the trick.
So the next city on our list is kind of the quintessential underground city, not only for its expansiveness, but for its still unrevealed mysteries. It's Paris, which is filled with subways, sewers, quarries, reservoirs, crypts, and wine cellars. And once you look at a map of underground Paris, it's actually kind of amazing that the city doesn't just collapse, something that is actually sometimes kind of a problem.
It is. This disturbed me after I learned about that. But Paris's buildings, many of which are, of course, built of limestone, give a little bit of a clue about what's actually underneath Paris, or what used to be underneath Paris. More limestone, of course, plus gypsum. And a long time ago, the quarries were built far outside of the city. So it wasn't like there was a danger of massive stone buildings falling into empty quarries. But eventually development caught up and new buildings would be placed over mines and quarries that had just been abandoned or filled with rubble. And nobody had a really good sense of where all this stuff was under the city and what was being built over it and how stable everything was. And after the city's first major collapse in 1774, it was followed quickly by a few other collapses. And Louis XVI brought in an architect named Charles Axel Guillemot to map the quarries, try to figure out where everything was underground, and come up with a plan to stabilize the city. Conveniently, though, this was around the same time Louis was ordering that Paris's overflowing cemeteries be emptied. And I went off on a research tangent on these gross cemeteries, too. I mean, yikes. Really, really bad. Charnel houses, just rotten bog grounds of cemetery. So they had a problem. All these bodies to deal with, what to do with all the bones. You know, people couldn't live in these areas anymore near the cemetery. So the solution was to put them in some of the old tunnels. So that's how the Paris catacombs came about. 6 million dead are interred within the Paris catacombs. I mean, probably most folks know this already, but they're, of course, not named in any way. They're not grouped even as entire skeletons, just bone piles.
Some of them are around 1,200 years old.
Yes. Pretty amazing fact. I do think it's noted what cemetery they came from, though. So that's one little nod to their original burial spot.
So that was the most famous result, probably, of Guillemot's work. But they also made a lot of progress as far as engineering and mapping the tunnels goes. And the department set up to examine the tunnels still exists today. And just a side note here, which might be a scary thought for a lot of people, there are still cave-ins, though there hasn't really been a big one since 1961. The maps drawn by Guillemot also serve as the basis for underground exploration today by people who are known as cataphiles, according to Neil Shea in National Geographic. Some of these cataphiles are casual explorers who enter sewers or old utility tunnels to paint or even just to hang out. Others are actually trained explorers who go as far as underground diving to examine unknown parts of the map.
Which sounds so terrifying. I mean, you're already underground, it's dark, there are rats, there are roaches, and then you dive into a pit of black water. No thanks.
Yeah. I'll skip it. So to combat the cataphiles, Paris has a special police unit, which we mentioned in the intro.
We did mention that. And it's interesting, too, I think it's the habitation of these tunnels which make underground Paris so fascinating, you know, that they're not just completely abandoned. One of the most interesting points to me was that during the war, of course, some of these old quarries were used by resistance fighters. Some were used as Nazi bunkers. But just more normal sort of pursuits, too. I mean, not hunkering down. For example, farmers would grow mushrooms in them because, you know, perfect dark, chilly, wet environment. Good for growing your market mushrooms, you know, not too close to the catacombs, I hope.
I hope not. Always watch your vegetables, I guess.
I guess so. That's the lesson to this story.
Yes, that's the one. So like Paris, New York City is another city that's really famous for its underground, its sewers, its subway, and so on. But for this, we're going to keep it really specific and talk about something called Track 61, which once symbolized the height of luxury in the city. It didn't start that way, though.
No, it really didn't. The original Grand Central Depot was, as you would imagine, a large train station built all above ground. The station, the tracks, the train yard, the whole deal. But between 1903 and 1913, according to Joseph Brennan and Columbia University, the railway and the terminal moved largely underground, you know, this massive construction project, which, of course, opened up all this valuable real estate at street level. So the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, one of the most famous luxury hotels out there for anybody who's not in the know already, was built on one of these auctioned off lots between 1929 and 1931. And it was built right above railway sidings underneath. And shortly before the hotel's construction, and this is an important note for what's actually under the hotel, some electrical buildings had stood on the site, and one of them had necessitated an underground loading platform that was located by the siding. So it wasn't a train station, so to speak, but there was a platform that existed underneath the Waldorf Astoria.
So eventually the hotel repurposed this old platform for its guests who were lucky enough to have their own private railway cars. You could basically exit your car and be whisked up by elevator to the hotel. FDR notably used this secret entrance for a 1944 campaign stop. And the station is now in disrepair, but it did have one last hurrah when Andy Warhol held his underground party there.
Not too many people with private rail cars these days, I guess.
Nope.
So a special train terminal sounds kind of nice, or a train station, a private train station, your own private car. It really sounds pretty lovely. But the next entry on our list is more on the disturbing dark side of underground life, and it's in Portland, Oregon, of all places. Underneath Old Town and Chinatown, you'll find shafts and tiny rooms and tunnels that all hint at a very dark maritime past that happened in the city. In the 19th century, ship captains would have trouble finding enough crewmen for these multi-year, very difficult voyages. And so unscrupulous Portlanders, or if that's what you call people who live in Portland, they would fill the demand for these crewmen by opening up pubs, drugging able-bodied patrons, and then dropping them through trapdoors in the floor that were called deadfalls. After that, you know, after these unsuspecting patrons would awake in some creepy underground chamber, they would be eventually taken down to the docks, sold to captains for as much as $50 a head, which was a tidy profit for the bar owners. At the time, it was called being Shanghai'd or crimping, and that's why still today the tunnels are called Shanghai Tunnels. This was one that was a listener suggestion, actually. I think the lady had gone on one of these Portland Shanghai tunnel tours. Was quite impressed by it.
Do you have to go through the trapdoors to get into the tunnels?
Have a little drop. Maybe it'll be like Seattle and you climb down a ladder.
So for the last spot on this list, we gave it to an underground city that extends layer by layer deeper and deeper into the past. And that's, of course, Rome. A visitor to Rome in 1580 described that if a man happened to dig on his property, he might easily uncover a column upright and extending from deep below ground.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And even as far back as the classical period, Roman architects would raise the surface level by just taking the roofs off of old buildings, backfilling them, and starting new on top. The Great Fire of AD 64 saw entire neighborhoods buried, and natural erosion buried low-lying areas in the Middle Ages.
So this is a little different from some of the other underground cities we've discussed, in that it wasn't necessarily intentional. I mean, it was intentional, but it's just building on top of trash,
right,
year after year. And churches especially are prime spots to find these layers of history underground, according to Tom Mueller in The Atlantic. And that's partly because the ancient churches were built on pagan temples, you know, to try to completely erase them, but keep people coming back to their familiar worship location. He used the example of San Clemente, which is near the Colosseum, where there is a 12th century church that sits on top of a 4th century church that sits on top of 1st century apartments and a temple, which sits on top of a building that was destroyed in the fire. And then, crazy, there's still something else below that because they can tell the walls keep on extending. It just hasn't been excavated yet. According to Mueller, though, there is a lot that's just under regular buildings, too. And I've always read that building projects in Rome are kind of a nightmare because you just dig down a little bit and you got to call the archaeologists in because you've uncovered some priceless find. But apparently many apartment dwellers are aware, you know, especially if they've lived in the place for a long time, their families have lived there, they know of some trapdoor in the apartment basement or something like that will lead to old graves or old villas or whatnot. Pretty interesting stuff.
Sounds like we could do an entire episode on haunted Rome or something like that.
I think we could definitely do that. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't put London on the short list, too, because another city with great underground culture. Rome, I got to experience a little bit of underground Rome when I visited after college. I went to the Capuchin Monastery, which has all of the, I've probably mentioned this on the podcast before,
the catacombs.
It has the bones arranged into these terrifying, I guess, Baroque sort of designs. I mean, it's very beautiful on the one hand, but a little bit disturbing, too.
A little bit scary. But I think that just, I mean, you mentioned London, and it just shows how much potential, I guess, there is to talk about some more of these underground cities and areas of cities.
Certainly. Plus, for London, we could talk about the Great Stink, which is another favorite listener suggestion.
And interestingly, there are some possibilities for underground cities or areas of cities in the future.
Yeah, and not just hiding away all of our ugly stuff, like sewers and all that. One example I read about in Smithsonian was something called the Earth Scraper, which is a 65-story underground pyramid planned for Mexico City. And it sounds pretty elaborate. According to the architect Esteban Suarez, the plaza above would be glassed over, and so you would have this natural light flooding into what I presume would be a reverse atrium almost inside. And then every 10 floors, you would have what he called an earth lobby, so green space, so you wouldn't feel too horrible working in the depths of the earth all day. And then other cities already have real underground situations already in action.
Yeah, Helsinki is an example of a city that already has an underground hockey rink, a church, a mall, a water treatment plant, but they also have an underground data center, which is kind of interesting. Usually these are really hot and require a lot of energy to keep them cool, but this center is kept cool by using seawater, which in turn is then used to warm homes that are above ground. And this model is being explored by several large Asian cities who are hoping to push some of, I guess, their less attractive or kind of
things you don't want above ground.
Right, things you don't really want to look at.
Sewage treatment plants, that sort of thing, or even data centers like this. So pretty interesting, underground cities of the future. I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll...
Lots of possibilities.
We'll have some interesting underground things to talk about in a few years.
So we have some listener mail here today.
I believe we do.
It's an email from listener Jason, and he says, I am a huge fan of your show and have recently listened to the podcast about William Randolph Hearst. I'm a history major at Townsend University, and about a year ago, I wrote a research paper on the history of marijuana legislation for a political science class. While researching the beginnings of the marijuana prohibition, I discovered that Hearst was instrumental in the passage of anti-hemp legislation. I became curious about the subject, but did not go into depth with my Hearst research due to the nature of the assignment. I was wondering if you could dedicate a podcast to Hearst and marijuana. And I get this request a lot, don't we, Sarah?
We do, because people listen to the Hearst episode and then they think, I actually wrote a blog post on it for the Science blog a few years ago now, trying to do multi-purpose sort of stuff there with history and
right.
science. But it is a really fascinating story, and it could make a great podcast, too. It was just fun for me at the time to be able to find a picture of Hearst, you know, doing a podcast on him and then writing a blog. But a very interesting story, so thank you for the suggestion.
And you can still check out that blog post on our site, perhaps?
Yeah, you might be able to find that if you type in some combination of Hearst and...
Dig around.
Our blog, yeah.
Dig around in the blogs.
Just like it's an underground city. If you want to send us any other suggestions, you can email us at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Twitter at Mistin History, and we're on Facebook.
And if you want to learn a little bit more about urban exploration, which we talked about in the intro to this podcast, it's a really kind of fascinating topic. You can read a little bit more about that by looking up our story, 10 Cities for Urban Exploration. And you can look that up by visiting our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.